This morning's reading is from 1 Samuel, chapter 1, and I'm beginning to read at verse 9. Once, when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli the priest was sitting on a chair by the doorstep of the Lord's temple. In bitterness of soul, Hannah wept and prayed to the Lord. And she made a vow, saying, O Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me, and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. After he was weaned, she took the boy with her, young as he was, along with a three-year-old bull, an ephah of flour and a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh. When they had slaughtered the bull, they brought the boy to Eli, and she said to him, As surely as you live, my lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For his whole life he will be given over to the Lord. And he worshipped the Lord there. Each year his mother made him a little robe and took it to him when she went up with her husband to offer the annual sacrifice. And the boy Samuel continued to grow in stature and in favor with the Lord and with men. This is the word of the Lord.
And today, as Phil said, we're starting a new series. And we're thinking today particularly about faith that lasts a lifetime. This has been advertised over the last few months as the Kitchen Table Project. Have you heard something about it up there? Where we're thinking about families and how faith can today last a lifetime. We're thinking about our own faith, of course, but also how we can help to nurture our own faith, the faith of others, the faith in our families, in children, grandchildren, and also younger people within our church here. So I think it's perhaps good to start with Samuel. As a child, I really loved this story of Samuel. It just fascinated me. I always asked my dad to read it to me over and over again. His mother was praying for a child and promising to dedicate this child to God. And she did. And he went to live in the temple. And then God spoke to him. We've not read that bit this morning, where he spoke to him in the night. Do you know that bit? I often thought, wow, I wonder what it'd be like if God spoke to me like that. And that, I was a tiny little girl when I was thinking this. But let's think for just a few minutes about Hannah, Samuel's mum. We didn't actually read the whole story. I'm sure most of you know it. But we came into the story where she was crying and anguished that she'd been unable to have a child. It's good to know a little bit behind that. Her husband, Elkanah, had two wives, which is quite normal in those days, and his other wife was called Peninnah, and she had children. And of course, she gloated over Hannah, so that made it worse. You know, if you're blessed to have children, you will know what indescribable love you have for them. It just comes, doesn't it? It's just a natural thing that happens. You want to protect them. You want the very best for them. And you know, we see this in the Bible as well. You think of Mary and Joseph rushing off to Egypt to protect Jesus, to keep him safe. They fled the country to keep him safe. And what about Jochebed? Do you know who she is? It's Moses' mother. And you know what she did? She built this cradle of bulrushes, floated him on the Nile and watched that he got picked up and looked after. Hannah could see all this sort of love around her. Obviously the love Peninnah and Elkanah had for their children. And she wanted this. And she was crying in the temple that day out to God. And you know, Eli thought she was drunk. We didn't read that bit either. But he discovered her plight. Let me just find my First Samuel. she cried out to God, asking her to be merciful and to give her a child. And when Eli eventually discovered what was the matter with her, he said, "Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant you what you have asked of him." God answered her prayers, and she gave birth to Samuel. Hannah and Elkanah loved their child. Hannah nursed him and looked after him until he's weaned. Do you know, those years would be his most formative years, because that's what we're told, isn't it? Those early years are very formative. And you know, when we think of weaning, we're probably thinking of a year, or maybe two at the most. But most commentators suggest that the meaning of the word here is that they looked after Samuel until he was of an age when he could manage without his parents. He would probably be somewhere between 8 and 12. We would probably say that was still far too young, but that's what it was. It wasn't a tiny little child of 2 or 3. He was a little bit older than that. Hannah remembered and took Samuel to the temple. Let's see, I'm trying to find the verse where she does it. And she said to Eli, "As surely as you live, my Lord, I am the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. I prayed for this child, and the Lord has granted me what I asked of him. So now I give him to the Lord. For the whole of his life he shall be given over to the Lord." And he worshipped the Lord there. I find that astonishing. As a mum, I find that astonishing. How on earth could she do that? Just hand her son over to this probably older man? Or as she thought to God, it's about her faith. What amazing faith she had. It was faith that lasted a lifetime, wasn't it? Because she was trusting God with her most precious possession, her child. So what could that possibly mean for us? Because I'm not sure it means us to bring all our children to the church and leave them here. I think Phil would have a fit, wouldn't he? He's got enough of his own, you know. It's not like that, but it's about dedicating our children to God. Our grandchildren, the children around us, trusting him with them. You know, in baptism or dedication, parents, godparents, and us make promises about those children, about loving them, caring for them, and bringing them up in our faith. And I would go a bit further to say it's not just about children, it's about each other as well. You know, we are created for relationship with God and with each other. We need to be able to nurture and care for each other in our growth and faith, as well as the children. We are responsible to each other to help each other along. And you know, Hannah didn't stop caring for Samuel, did she, when she left him at the temple? She made him a new coat each year, and she went to the temple to see him. I'm sure he was very glad of that encouragement. That's something we all need, isn't it? We need to receive encouragement. We need to give encouragement to others, children and adults. Don't you feel good when someone encourages you? I know I do. And I also know how I feel when I'm able to encourage others. You know, over the years, I've been very blessed in that I've been in the church for so many, many years. And I've had many people, including my own children, thank me for encouraging them. It's so important, isn't it? I always want to stress that. You know, it's a gift that God gives us, but I think every one of us has a role there. Encourage. What a difference it makes to people's lives. I'm sure none of us do it enough. Let's decide today to be encouragers, because I think that's incredibly important. Let me read you a little story. By his early teens, Robert's parents had despaired of him. He had rejected the church some years earlier and was hanging out with the rougher lads in the neighbourhood. He was constantly harangued for his poor academic performance. Mum and Dad desperately wanted him to succeed, although most of all, they wanted him to come back to the church. On one of his many truancy days, he happened to run into Marge, an old lady who he'd known from Sunday school. She invited him to her home, and to her surprise, he accepted. A relationship developed, and Robert started spending some time helping her in her garden, which he found he enjoyed, and Marge made such a fuss of him for the work he did, though she made it clear that it was strictly an after-school arrangement. Robert never did amount to much academically, but 18 months after he bumped into Marge, he was escorting her to church. Where everything else had failed, unconditional love and encouragement had succeeded. And you see, we don't know what our words can do for other people, just that little bit of encouragement. Samuel, our reading tells us, continued to grow in stature and in favour with the Lord and with men. Samuel's faith did last a lifetime. We can see that by reading the scriptures. And it did that because he was continually learning and continually growing in the Lord. And that, again, is so important. He'll have learnt from Eli. He'll have learnt from all the others he's encountered along the way. And, you know, it's interesting that we read similar statements about John the Baptist and about Jesus himself. Luke 1 says of John the Baptist, "And the child grew and became strong in spirit." How did that happen? It must have happened from his home into the place where he worshipped. Luke 2 says of Jesus, "And the child grew and became strong. He was filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him." So it's about growing all the time in the Lord. Paul reminded a young Timothy to remain faithful to the truths, scriptures, and wisdom he'd been taught by his mother and grandmother. You know, our role in people's lives and faith, our children, our families, our friends around us can be very significant. We have an amazing opportunity to pass our faith on to those around us and to future generations. I want to finish with a couple of stories and perhaps some practical things that we can do. But before we do that, let's spend a moment looking at Jesus, because that's where it has to start for us. If we're going to encourage, if we're going to pass on, what are we passing on? Look at Jesus and remember what he has done for us. The love of Jesus for us, the love of our Father, is absolute. This is possible because Jesus died for us so that we could be forgiven, so that we could be in a relationship with our Father. You know, I was doing some cleaning this week. I do sometimes. Actually, I have to say we shared it. We were cleaning our slatted blinds. Have you ever cleaned slatted blinds? Oh, what a drag. It's a tough job. And I can remember thinking, when they were done so beautifully by my husband, thinking, well, that's okay. Not perfect, but okay. Nothing to do with him. It was just as much me. But suddenly a thought came into my mind. I'm not always this spiritual, but a thought came to me at that point, and I suddenly thought, you know, when Jesus cleanses, when he takes our sin, he makes us perfect. It's not that'll do, but we are clean, each one of us are clean, when we come and confess and ask Jesus for forgiveness. You know, when we grasp that, and the depth of the love that gave everything, gave us everything, we grow in stature and in favour with God and people. Is this worth passing on? Yeah. So what do we do? I want to read you a couple of stories from this book. This is a book I love. It's called A Year's Journey with God by Jennifer Rees Larkham, and I've used it a few times, actually. This isn't the first year I've gone through it, but it's always got something wonderful to tell me. And last week I picked it up and I read this one. It was the wrong day. It wasn't even the right day for it, because it's dated, because I'd got a bit behind. So it was August the 22nd. I was a bit behind. And it said this. It started off with a statement from Jeremiah. I have loved you with an everlasting love. I have drawn you with loving kindness. This lady writes, school was a perpetual nightmare for me. So I've always struggled with a fear of teachers. Then on a Christian holiday, I met Louise. She must have been in her 80s. And I loved her at sight. She told me how excited she had been when she was given her first headship in a tough inner city junior school. I asked God what my goal in that school should be. Most of the children came from abusive, criminal, dysfunctional families. So should I aim to teach morality? Would academic excellence boost morale? Or ought I to concentrate on supporting my beleaguered staff? I felt God answered me through something I heard a retired clergyman say. All things are at their best when they're loved. So I tried to make each child feel loved and appreciated for their unique contribution to the life of the school. Most had never experienced love, but they responded amazingly. So did my staff. Somehow, with love coming first, the other things like morality, academic success, and a happy staff room just came automatically. There is a bloom on a child or an adult who is loved. They have confidence to grow into their own potential. In contrast, someone who is unloved just seems to shrivel up inside. Isn't that a lovely message about love coming first? And I have just another short story. This one is a little bit more about prayer, because that's what we start with, isn't it? Love. Loving everybody, loving each other, loving the children in the church around us, obviously loving our families to the uttermost. And you know, the next thing I wanted to leave with you was prayer. It's so important, isn't it, that we pray for our loved ones and friends. Another story, and then I'll share a couple of personal things before I finish. If I tell you this story is headed Amazing Grace, you'll know who I'm talking about, won't you? The word at the top says, there is no other name under heaven given to men by which we must be saved. And it starts with a different hymn. It starts with how sweet the name of Jesus sounds in a believer's ear. It soothes his sorrow, heals his wounds, and drives away his fear. It's almost impossible to believe that those words were written by a man who had once been the captain of a slave ship, notorious for his violence and cruelty. John Newton's mother taught him about Jesus and his amazing grace and prayed earnestly for him. But as she lay dying when John was only 7, she might well have wondered how he could possibly survive spiritually in the care of his godless sea captain father. How she would have hated the diabolically evil trade that became his life. Yet her prayers were eventually answered during a terrible storm when John remembered her faith and cried out to God. Later in his cabin, he committed the rest of his life to serving him. And we know, of course, John Newton's most famous hymn, Amazing Grace. He discovered that amazing grace that night. Don't give up praying. I'm so thankful that my daughters know Jesus, and I know their faith will last a lifetime. But not all my family know Jesus yet. Every day I pray for all our family by name, all 10 of them, my daughters, sons-in-laws, and grandchildren. Some of them know the Lord, some of them don't. Every day I pray, and for my wider family. And in my Bible reading notes at night, I keep this bit of string. I have to use notes at night, otherwise I go to sleep. I have this piece of string with 5 knots in. We did this in house group several years ago, didn't we, Sheila? I don't know if you remember, or maybe it was when you were away. We had a piece of string, and we were encouraged to tie a knot in it for people who didn't know Jesus, and to pray regularly for them. I put 5 names on my bit of string, and I pray for them every night, and I have been doing for a couple of years now. I've seen a fraction of change in one of them. But I'm going to keep praying. I'm going to keep praying. I'm not giving up. Every night, it's going back as soon as I get home into my Bible reading notes. Because if it's not there, I might forget. And I don't want to forget. You know, we prayed for Paul's sister for 10 years. Jan was brought up, as Paul was, in the church. She knew about the church. But she had a horrendous experience, several horrendous experiences in her life, that turned her away from the church, and they were really bad. And we were sad about this, and we started praying. And we prayed every day for 10 years. Jan is now the most amazing Christian you could meet. She's full of the Lord, in church, at very church, very similar to this one. We worshipped with her a lot when we had some time off after we retired. And she's just blossoming in God. Don't give up. Keep praying. It's so important. I want all my family to be up there with me. Please love and pray for your children and families. For all the children and young people in this church. They're so precious. Isn't it lovely to see George running up and down? But he's here, isn't he? He's getting it. He's hearing the word of the Lord even when he doesn't know he is. And for each other. How God will be glorified if we do this. Amen.